This week's conversation with Yvette Stanton is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America. Here's a word from EGA President Lee Peacock about one of EGA's true gems.
Hi, this is Lee Peacock, President of the Embroiderers Guild of America. Did you know there's a virtual exhibit that is open to members and non-members of EGA? The 22nd Through the Needle's Eye, also known as the T&E, tells the stories of the stitchers' cultural journeys toward developing their masterpieces. This remarkable exhibit was first displayed virtually at our 2023 National Seminar and is now available to members and non-members of EGA. The T&E exhibit is so large, we needed two virtual galleries to display all of the beautiful pieces. To make your viewing more enjoyable, you might want to print out a list of the entries. On the website, there's a link that will give you a list of all the pieces that are included in the show, sorted by gallery, and will indicate all of the winners. Are you concerned that you might be unable to navigate the exhibit? Not to worry. We have a detailed manual to explain how to move around the exhibit and how to use the special features such as zooming in to see the details and reading the artist's statements. Using the buttons on the website, you'll be able to move from one gallery to the other. To access the exhibit, go to egausa.org. Click on the Events tab and choose Through the Needle's Eye exhibit. We hope you will enjoy the exhibit and will come back many times to view these outstanding examples of creativity and needlework. And don't forget, please sign our guest book.
Thanks to the EGA for sponsoring this week's show. Our conversation with Yvette Stanton focuses on her new book, Hardanger Filling Stitches. Note that Sassy Jack Stitchery is the U.S. distributor for much of Yvette's catalog of books and has in stock the new Filling Stitches book. You can buy directly from Sassy Jack's or have your local needlework store contact Kim to obtain the books you want to add to your library. Now, our conversation with Yvette Stanton. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. And our artist this week, for the fourth time, Yvette Stanton of Vetti Creations. Yvette, welcome.
Thank you very much. Hello.
The queen of white work, they call her. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I bet you love
Apparently.
That. I bet you just love that, yeah.
At first, I tried to sort of like play that down, and then I thought, oh, actually, I may as well own that.
Yeah.
It's worth owning, yeah.
Yeah.
So we've been trying to, I think we were kind of tentatively set up to record about your new book, Filling Stitches, and then you got sick, and then you were well, and then you got sick again, and blah, 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 and now you're healthy, and so now we get to do it. Yay.
Yes.
Because the book was, when was the book published? That was last year when?
So it came out in Australia at the end of 23. It came out in UK and Europe about February 24 and March in the US.
March in the US, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we got it together finally. And the beauty of all your books is that they don't get old, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Timeless. Yeah,
we can talk about it. So I was looking at material for today, for this thing, take us through what it is that if I were going to start, I got nothing. And I wanted to learn how to do hardanger. Take us through what you would recommend in terms of materials. And obviously we want to start with your book, Early Style Hardanger. This is the book, folks. And then the filling stitches, which we'll talk about later, yeah, it fills in all the things. But the early style, this one. But take us through, what is it that I would want in terms of ground cloth and thread, and what do you recommend to raw beginners?
Sure. So, first of all, I'd consider what your eyesight can see. There is no point in trying to do hardanger on, say, 36 count linen if you can't see it. So choose a count of fabric that you know that you will be able to see the holes accurately. So some people would say that you must do hardanger on 22 count hardanger or Oslo or I don't know the names of it around the world, fabric. That is not true. You do not need to. That is not what they traditionally used in hardanger. So don't feel that you must go for 22 count fabric. You do not have to. So choose either a fabric such as, oh, one of those ones that's got a bit of viscose in it, which I can't remember off the top. Oh, Lugana. You can choose that sort of thing. If that's a count that you can see and you prefer the regularity of the threads being exactly where you expect them to be. But if you prefer linen, choose a count of linen that you like. And the threads may have slubs and you just accept that that's the beauty of linen. Now, in terms of thread that you'd want to use with that, you need two thicknesses of thread. So if we're going for, say, a 28 count linen, which is a reasonable sort of size that a lot of people can see, then you would choose a Pearl 8, which is the thicker of the two threads, and a Pearl 12, which is the thinner of the two threads. And so the thick thread, the Pearl 8, would be used for all of your satin stitch, and the Pearl 12 would be used for everything else. Now, some people like to have a different size needle for both of those. I actually managed to use a 24, Tapestry 24, for both those sizes of threads, and I find that works fine. Some people like to use a hoop. Some people don't. And if you are, like if you already do stitch and you normally use a hoop, you may find that you prefer to use a hoop with your hardanger. However, one of the things about hardanger is that you're doing similar motions again and again and again. And so if you don't have it in a hoop, you can be making movements that get into your muscle memory. If you're using a hoop, then you're going up and then you're hunting around for the next hole to come out of, and then you're hunting around for the next hole to go back into, and you don't get the rhythm up quite so well. So if you're a rhythm sort of person, if you think that that will help, try it without a hoop. If you're having no success, pop it in a hoop and see if that helps you. So some people will be one way and others will be the other way. And there's no right or wrong in terms of that. Just do what works for you.
Okay.
The other thing you might want is good lighting and maybe some magnification.
Yeah.
But if you've chosen a size of fabric that you can see, you hopefully won't need the magnification.
And when you stitch in hand, no hoop, no nothing?
For my hardanger, I generally do it in hand. If I'm doing a filling stitch that has diagonal stitches, so the potential to pull on the bias, then I'll put it into a small hoop, so something like a 3-inch hoop, just large enough for my motif, and I'll work it in that just for that.
Oh, okay. That way you know it's held square.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so the your threads are, you don't use a linen thread, just a cotton thread?
If you're a beginner, I would say you might want to try using a cotton thread, so pearl cotton, because they're easier to find. A linen thread does have advantages, but some people don't like them because they're used to seeing the shine of a pearl cotton and it doesn't have the same sort of shine. However, when you're using a linen thread, linen creases, and so if you're pulling threads for some of your pulled thread stitches, if you pull it and then pinch it between your finger and thumb, it will crease and therefore it won't slip backwards in the same way that a cotton might. So you're using the property of the linen, that the fact that it likes to crease, to help you maintain good tension.
Mm. Right. Can you say that again? Because I know I did a white work piece and we were using linen thread and I was having a terrible time with it. So you pinch it as you're moving it through the, like if I'm wrapping a bar.
Yeah, so if you're doing, say, an eyelet, you'll
Okay.
take your needle through the center of the eyelet and bring it up at the side and then pull away from the center. And then to help that stitch stay in place with your finger and thumb of the other hand, just pinch it on one side of the fabric, like so your thumb's above and your fingers underneath, pinch it, and that will crease the thread and it will stop it from slipping back quite so much, particularly if you're using linen.
Oh, I've got to try this again. Because I was pretty frustrated and I was like, oh, maybe I should have just done pearl cotton or even a silk, you know, because I was using the linen and I was having a horrible time with it. And I thought I'm doing something wrong because this is supposed to be better. This is supposed to be easier.
Well,
And I got
it's
to
not
try again or
necessarily
different.
better, it's different. So it's traditionally what they used for hardanger. And so, you know, I like to do the traditional, so therefore I try to use linen thread. But if you're just beginning, use what makes it easier for you. And you're not necessarily trying to get the really, really fine, tight holes with that. You're just trying to learn how to do the stitches. So that might be an easier way to start. But if you want to start with the true traditional, go for your linen thread. Why not?
It's available too in a lot of colors in the United States anymore. I know few shops that are carrying it, the linen threads, which is interesting to me because all of a sudden it's shown up in several places I lurk and look at. So it's kind of
Well,
nice.
the
It's
other
kind of
thing
nice.
that I want to say about linen thread is many of us remember the awful linen thread that DMC brought out many years ago, like 15, 20 or something rather years ago. Now, that was like straw. Today's linen threads are not like straw. They can be beautifully polished threads, especially if you burnish them. And, you know, some of the pieces that I've seen in museums, they shine because they have been probably laundered and pressed so many times that it's brought up the shine in the linen.
Okay.
There you
That's
go,
nice to
Beth.
know. I know. I know. Now I'm really, I'm going to go dig through my stash, see what I can find.
Yeah, because what was the book you were showing me this morning where you and you'd started?
Oh, that was from the Frisian book, but this cracked me up. I was pulling out my book and I found, can you see it? There it is. It's a blue on blue. I don't know. There you are. It's blowing out. See how it's blue on blue? And I stopped in the middle. It's very shiny. You can't see that here, but I know it's a pearl. But what color was I using? Why did I stop? What was I going to do in the center?
I don't know, but you better get on with it because that looks really good. So keep going.
I think I did the hard part. I think I did whatever that funky stitch is around. Who knows? Who knows? All I have to do is the corners. What was I thinking? I just stopped. Oh, who knows?
Yeah, that was my reaction. Jeez, Beth, you're on a roll there. Keep going.
I don't know. I found something else to do, and away it went. And then, of course, what thread was I using? That's
oh, you don't know. Oh.
I have no clue. It wasn't with the
Can't help you
piece.
there, sorry.
No. Now I have to go dig through my stuff.
Do you find hardanger holding its own in terms of interest, growing in interest? Or
I honestly wouldn't have a clue.
Okay, all right.
I know that the people who love it still love it. So I'm in a number of hardanger groups on Facebook, and you know there is a lot of interest in hardanger. Whether it's growing or not, I don't know. I'd love to think it is, but that's very hard to gauge, I reckon.
But in terms of what you do, you're not seeing a drop off though.
No, the sales of my most recent book tells me that it's going quite well.
Well, I just because, you know, we hear enough about it that and you see enough people doing the work that it suggests to me that it's not something that's fading into the woodwork, that it's a technique and a style that there's still good interest in it. And
I would say that's true.
As opposed to, you know, because you see some and then you don't hear about them for a long time. And then all of a sudden they catch on for whatever reason. Don't know. Yeah. Somebody does it and it looks good. And so everybody else wants to do it. Lemming effect.
Well, I think it will definitely remain popular and current in Norway for as long as we can imagine.
Yeah, I'm sure of that. Yep. Have you been back to Norway since you did the early style book? Because you traveled there, didn't you, for that one?
Yes, I did. I think that I did the Smoig book after that one. Yes, so I went back for the research for that one as well.
Is that when you go make a trip like that, do you always learn things, or do you find it's just confirming what you already know?
I go to learn. That is my express
Oh, okay.
purpose in going there. So I'll line up appointments at various museums to go and look at as many pieces as I possibly can and learn what I can. If there's people that I can meet with to learn from them as well, then I'll do that. But yeah, that is my purpose in going to those places.
And you still there's still more to learn now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, just wonder, 'cause as much as you've done, as much as you studied and worked white work, at some point you'd think, well, all right, I pretty much got most of it, and every now and then something new will pop up, but not the case.
No,
Okay.
not a chance.
Well, that's good. That bodes well for the future. So you did early style Hardanger. That one you did, it really, if I recall correctly, established the way it was originally done. It's kind of the purpose, the way, trying to back to the
Well,
origins.
yeah, I was trying to take people back to the way it was originally done because, Hardanger has been done in many places around the world, and the further it gets away from Norway, the further it seems to change from what was traditionally done. So that book was because I wanted to show people actually this is what it used to be like, and there is beauty in this too. So maybe some of us could be doing it in this style.
Well, I mean, I think that I know whenever it comes up, and people, the subject comes up, I always suggest, use this book, because this will take
Thanks.
you back. Well, but it'll take you back to the origins and get you
Yeah.
squared away right out of the gate in terms of how it was done, which to me is important, because then when you see variations, you have a reference point.
Yeah, I think it's good to learn the traditional way before you decide to depart from that. Learn the rules and then break them.
So that book, and then now the new one is Filling Stitches. And we were talking ahead of time, this is twice the thickness of any of your other books. So this is a hefty one. So then, I mean, you obviously in the early style Hardanger, you have filling stitches, but in this one, what prompts you? What says to you, wait, I got to put them all or as many as I can get into one book?
Well, the thing that prompted me wasn't a thing, it was a person. A lady called Donna contacted me, and she said that she thought that I was the person to write a filling stitch dictionary on, well, a stitch dictionary on filling stitches for Hardanger. And I thought about it probably for less than a day and thought, yes, she's absolutely right. That does need to be written. No one's written it. And why not me? So she said she'd been waiting about 40 years for that book.
Oh my.
So I tried to collect together as many filling stitches I could find from as many places that I could find. Some of them I only had reference material of a photograph, and no idea how to make it. So, there's a lot of experimentation that has to go into that sort of thing. Others, there were instructions that I tried and then tried to improve upon. So yeah, a lot of research went into that, which was enormously fun.
Yeah, well, that was what I was wondering. When you go through the book, I start thinking, how many of these were new discoveries, or like you said, you got a picture, and now I got to figure out how they did it, and hope. Well, it didn't matter if you got it right or not. Nobody else has done it, so who cares?
Yeah,
It
well,
works.
many of them I'd never tried before. So that was a process of me learning and then learning well enough to be able to teach them, learning what the difficult points were and where people were likely to go wrong, and then trying to solve those problems before they even got to them.
So did you, at a point where, is there any end to these things, or were you pretty well able to define X number and that's about it?
I'm sure there are many more stitches that could go into that book, but I publish myself in Australia and New Zealand under my own Vetti Creations imprint, and the rest of the world, I co-publish with Search Press. Mm-hmm. And so Search Press said to me, you have to stop. You cannot add any more. And I said, no. So then it was a matter of, you know, they had allowed me 280 pages, and I had to squeeze as much as I possibly could into that while still allowing it to be understandable and not so crammed in that you could make no sense of it at all.
Okay. That answers the question. Now we know there's more to be done. Yeah.
So yeah. There were some stitches that I decided to leave out. So the ones that were very much more reticella style, it is a book on hardanger filling stitches. It's not a book on reticella style stitches. So there are some that there is a bit of an overlap, but there were some stitches that were very much reticella that I just thought I can't include them because I have limited space. If there was all the space in the world, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, that overlap, is that difficult to define, reticella and hardanger? Is there enough overlap that it's hard to separate, or is it usually pretty clear?
Well, the more people that keep switching between the two, I think the more the lines for the filling stitches get blurred. But in my mind, it's the more complicated conglomerate style stitches where you put this with this and this, and rather than just being a stitch, it's a whole lot of stitches together. So that's what I considered to be not necessarily something that would go in the book.
Okay. So somewhere in there is one step too far, and that's where you draw the line.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Or maybe a stitch that I never got working beautifully, so I just thought, well, I'm not putting that one in.
They'll never know. when you're looking for how many can I find, or is it museums and just basic raw research, just pound away till you run out of them?
Sometimes it was just Google image searches, particularly in really, really old books. So some of the really old encyclopedia type books don't have great instructions. They might have written instructions and a photograph. And in this day and age, we don't think that's good enough. So then it was up to me to devise the step-by-step method of how to show that. There were some stitches that, like, I asked in the hardanger groups that I was in, what stitches, if I was writing a book like this, what stitches do you have trouble with? What aspect of it do you have trouble with? So that I could try and solve those problems for them. But I also wanted to know if anyone had any stitches that they'd never seen written up, that they wanted written up. And I had a few stitches that were submitted to me as original stitches that someone had devised. So it's a real thrill to have them in my book, to be able to share them with more people and have them documented.
I'm starting to see, though, why you ran yourself into the ground if you're doing twice the book in half the time and doing all that work. I mean, that's an incredible amount of research to get all that together. Wow.
Yeah. But I enjoy that sort of thing. So it didn't feel like it was too much. I just felt like I was having fun. And then my body at the end said, no.
You're
done.
That
was not a good idea.
Is there enough left over for another book, or do you think you...
No, I think at this stage that's probably the full extent of that book. I don't know that anyone has an appetite for me to add to it.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I like having
maybe.
That's what I love about you know, that's what I love about your work is you're preserving history in all these techniques, and
that's what I love about it too.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's, you know, above everything else, that's so important because so much of this stuff gets lost. Who are we? We talked to this group, and was it Madagascar or whatever that was doing work, and they had none of the stitching from their history.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, there had to be some somewhere, and they had none of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when I hear that, then I often, it's weird, but I think of you and how you've preserved in your books. You know, you've preserved a lot of history, a lot of needlework history, and made it so people can keep doing it. And when you see a culture that has completely lost you know, that's just, it's just tragic
It is.
because
I think we're getting to crunch time with that, really, because we're getting to the stage where there are many of those cultural custodians that still do the work are dying out. And that's happening around the world. And very soon there will be a lot that is lost to us. And I think we need to get that recorded while they're still with us. And I think that that's really, really important.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I do too. Well, I mean, you have your Ukrainian book, you know, and you think of what's gone on in Ukraine in the past 3 years, and how you know tremendous amounts of art and culture have been just destroyed.
Yes.
And, you know, and you at least, there's a book that has documented and kept the needlework aspect of it. I mean, that's an important role to play far beyond just the needle and thread. And
Well, I think in Ukraine, stitching has had a very important role over the last while, because there's been a lot of particularly women doing it while their men folk are off at war. It brings them comfort and solace. But also, it's an if when they're doing traditional styles of Ukrainian embroidery, it's expressing their Ukrainianness, which is something that they really want to do at the moment. And for my book to have played a small part, in that, that's really lovely to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would suggest more than a small part. I mean, you've kept it alive. It's there. It's documented.
There are other Ukrainian language books on that style of embroidery. So I'm not the only one, but I'm one of them.
Yeah. Well, you're the only one I can read, so. Yeah. But it's just, you know, I just think it's an important role because what do you have? How many books do you have? 11 of them now?
Yeah.
11 and what?
It shocks me too.
Yeah. Because what nine, you have the left-handed and the right-handed, and then the rest of them are all techniques that you've researched and preserved. So.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Any left-handers out there, you want to own Yvette's left-handed book.
Yeah, don't say that. It's out of print.
Oh, that's
so
right.
That'll just make them very frustrated. But it is my plan to revise that. I'm a lot behind where I wanted to be, having been sick all last year. But, you know, things are happening. So
watch
one day it will be back in print again, as will the Ukrainian book.
Watch for it in the near future. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't say now.
All right, in the future, somewhere down the road.
The future. Somewhere down the road. Somewhere down the road.
Yeah, don't put any pressure on me. I just don't do well with that.
So the filling stitches then, I assume that people that you interact with often have found new avenues with it in terms of, I didn't know that one existed or.
Oh, I'm sure there's been a lot of people. I mean, I wrote the book and there was a lot that I didn't know existed. So yeah, I'm sure other people have found that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that lady that did the sampler out of the book that you posted just the other day, holy smokes. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it
was that was
beautiful.
Gorgeous.
I do have quite a few people that send me photographs of their finished samplers, and it's really lovely to be able to share them because I think it encourages other people to think that I could do that too.
Mm-hmm.
But someone commented to say it was a triumph, and I thought, yeah, it is a triumph. Anyone that completes it, it's a real triumph. Because it's a lot of work and a lot of learning.
Right. You know, to make it look nice. Because I think if you're just going to, some of these stitches are difficult. I mean, I've done a few of them. And to get the tension right, to get them to look nice, if you're going to use it as a learning piece, you're still going to be ripping it out or to practice on a doodle cloth and then put it on your piece. Because ripping out woven stitches is not fun. Yeah. Having done it, but all the learning that would go on to do the whole sampler, I think that's what intrigues me because I've done a little bit of reticella, I've done a little bit of hardanger, and I think I got to do this because it has all those, it hits all the buttons for me. It has all the little squares, and you get a little, I don't know, what is that? A little adrenaline kick when you finish a little square. You know, I've done a motif.
Yay. Yep. There are so many different parts of it that you can celebrate each little bit as you complete it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now that has every filling stitch in that sampler?
It does not. No, yeah. I was not able to squeeze them all in there, but there are most of them in it.
Yeah. It's impressive. It's an amazing
Yeah, that's
piece.
gorgeous. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And I always think of, but I was looking at this at the back. I like all these. Okay, so see, it's like a merit badge thing again. You've got the merit badge going on, where if you do all the little stitches,
Tick them
make
off
yourself a
every
little.
day you've completed them.
Right. I'm thinking of like the Girl Scout. I don't know what they have in Australia where you had
Yeah, they have that
the metric the badge sash that you could, you put them all on there. Keeps a little sash with all the filling stitches.
We got to get Beth a
Sorry.
sash. We're just going to have to make her a sash and start giving her little badges. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's
Yeah.
right.
So you set out with this book, but the cool thing is, so one would think, all right, these are all filling stitches, so I need the beginner book, but you have this section in the front to help people get started too. So
Yeah.
the book is really well set up, I thought. It really no matter who, you get this book and there's enough in here that you can really get going.
Yeah, I don't consider it to be a beginner's book, but I wanted to put enough in the beginning to show people the basics to get started. But also, some people have learned bad technique from, say, YouTube channels that are just teaching a way of doing it, which is not necessarily a good way of doing it. And so I wanted to explain this is the way I would do it, and this is the way I have found get excellent results. And those sorts of things that comes with experience. But yeah, I wanted to put enough beginner information in there that you could make a start with just that book if you wanted to. But I don't consider it to be a beginner's book because there's so much in there that is well beyond the realms of a beginner. And I wouldn't want them to think, oh, let's launch into, say, Queen Anne's lace stitch, having just started Hardanger yesterday, and I will get a fabulous result. Well, you may, but you may not.
Yeah, a little complicated to jump right into that. But you have one of the main things I think that scares people about Hardanger is if I cut the wrong threads, what can I do? And you say,
Well,
and you show, and it happens. It happens all,
it
but
does.
it's fixable
Yeah.
for the
And I
most of the
often say
time.
that the best place to make those mistakes is in a class because I can show you how to fix it. But as I'm not with all of you, I do have information on that in the book of ways you could fix things.
Yeah, I was
And
glad
that's
to see
always
that.
important.
Yeah. I was glad to see it because the first time I did it, I thought you cut the wrong thread and it's just trash. And
No. Doesn't have to be. Sometimes it is such a bad mistake that that is the case, but usually there is some way of fixing it. You've just got to have the confidence to get in there and give it a go.
Ooh, that's a big hurdle. That's a big
Yeah.
hurdle. Yeah. You want me to
But you
cut
learn by
what?
doing, so the best way to fix it is to actually start trying to do it. If you just think, I'm not, it's not going to look perfect. Well, of course it's not going to look perfect because you haven't actually done anything to it yet. You've got to make a start before you can make it look perfect.
Yeah. I'll never forget the first one I cut. Man. Oh no. It's gonna come up. It's just gonna. I could just. Well, I'm sure everyone has visions of the whole thing just unravels in your hands, and
Yeah.
you're sitting there going, and it doesn't happen. Not if you do it right. Yep. So
Nope,
you got
nope.
this book all set up. I mean, it's very well organized. And I love the part that Beth was showing the filling stitch pictorial index in the back. I mean, that's almost wanted to say, can we move that to the front? Because it's just really, to me, that's really excellent in terms of
That's why I wanted to put it there, because I thought it would be incredibly useful to have something like that.
Yeah, I
Because
think
often
that's
we'll
nice. So
think, oh, I need a stitch that looks like this. And then you can just go to the pictorial index and think, oh, well, I could try that one or that one or that one. And it's much easier than leafing through the whole thing.
Right. And I love in the book how you not only have the little pictures of the drawings, you have the actual the stitch of how it looks like with the threads, the little last picture there, which is nice because sometimes if you just have the pictures, you're like, well, this mine doesn't quite look like the picture. I mean, I need the image, I should say, not the picture. But and then you have the picture and you're like, oh, okay. That's how it's supposed to look.
Yeah.
And
the
that's
photograph
helpful.
gives you something to aim for.
Oh, I just saw this wheel stitch. I've got to try this one. Oh, sorry. Distracted by the book.
Yeah, that's the problem doing these shows with
I
Beth
know.
is yeah, the squirrel factor gets in the way.
All the time. All the time. And I know, because okay, so the sampler doesn't have all the stitches. But I could pick and choose which ones I wanted to put in there. I wouldn't
Yeah,
have to
you can
necessarily follow
replace
yours
some of the ones that
exactly.
you don't like or whatever. If you think there's a different one that would work better in that spot or the one that you want to try, well, take something out and put yours in.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be just so lovely to have that finished, Gary, just stitched up and hanging
Oh,
behind me?
mind blowing. I mean, it's
Well,
beautiful.
I am disappointed that it's not already there.
I know. I know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
But
I
and
could have.
go ahead. What?
I just have to start it. Just get us started.
You do.
You got that Frisian one that you have started too, so you might as well start a whole bunch of them.
Well, this is just a little practice.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't
That's what
count
that
as
is.
anything.
Yeah. But that, and that's the other thing about all your books is the diagrams are just superb.
Thank
And
you.
I mean they really are, 'cause if there's they just eliminate any question about where to go over, where to go under, where to go through, and every little step documented. It's really, but that's in all your books, right? I mean, all of them.
Yeah, I work very hard to make them to be as clear communication as I possibly can be.
Right, and that's nice. I think that when I was excited about this book, I was working on a different white work piece, and the only I had it was a Rotocella book I was learning from, and it was okay. It was all right, but now I was like, I wish I had this because this would have made some of those stitches a lot easier.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, if you're doing Rotocella, there might be enough of, say, a different hardanger stitch that you can learn what you need to make your Rotocella stitch look good.
Yeah, that's why don't you make a Rotocella book next?
Other people have
Sorry.
written them already.
That's true. That's true. There are
As
some
we were
out there.
saying before about things that haven't been written on, I find that it's probably more important for me to document things that are totally undocumented at this stage.
True.
There is
True.
only one of me after all, and I think let's use me wisely.
Because we haven't learned to clone you yet. That's too bad. So
No, I
sad.
mean, I do have a twin sister, but she's not a clone and she doesn't do what I want. She does her, she lives her own life.
Oh, the nerve of her.
Sisters are, I know, sisters.
Are there other techniques that you hope to get to that you've.
Yeah, there are.
Are there
Am I going to
really?
tell you what they are? No, I'm
No,
not.
didn't figure you would, but. So they're actually okay, but that's interesting in its own right then. So there are other white work techniques that are worthy of a book. Wow.
Yeah, there are others that like it's on my list and I want to get there and I want to get there and it just hasn't come to be the right time yet.
Yeah. But that's so impressive, through history that I mean you got nine of them and yet there's more.
Well, three of those are hardanger of those nine. So, yeah. But yeah, there's many more. I could probably spend the rest of my life working my way through just Italian needlework. There is so much there. You go into little tiny corners of countries and just this such a town will have its own style of embroidery that why not document it?
Just got isolated off and
Yeah.
never got spread. Fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you try to get to Europe and study once a year, or is the internet?
No.
No.
Generally, a book takes me about every, well, I get one done about every 2 years. So I wouldn't want to be researching more often than that. But I don't always have the opportunity to travel. Things like, mortgages
Oh.
have their effect on one's plans. yeah, if I could be in Europe every year to be learning, that would be fabulous. But seeing I'm in Australia, that's a little bit unrealistic, unfortunately.
Yeah. But is that with the internet and what's available today for museums, is that generally sufficient, or do you still feel like you need to actually go at some point?
Look, in some cases it could be sufficient, but I would still prefer to go there. There are things that you can't really get without seeing them in person, seeing the scale of things. And quite often I will turn a work over to see the back of it because that helps me to understand the method that is used to make a stitch. And if I can't turn it over, then I don't get to understand that. And so therefore it can be really, really important to see these things in the flesh. And so there's nothing quite like it. And I would always want to travel to a place, if I possibly could, to be able to see the work. So when I did the Ukrainian book, I didn't go to Ukraine, but I did go to the Ukrainian Museum in New York, and they have a fabulous collection there, and I used that collection extensively. I obviously probably wouldn't want to go to Ukraine at the moment either.
No.
So there are sometimes reasons why you don't necessarily get to go to the actual place, but as long as you see a really good selection of the work, of the proper original work and not derivative work, then I think you've got enough to learn from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Museums, when you approach them to do this kind of research, do you find them generally pretty accommodating?
I do, yes. You just need to approach them professionally and say that I'm doing this and I would like to do this, and we then arrange a time. Often they'll ask me what particularly I want to see, and sometimes I will be able to tell them particular works, and sometimes I will just say, I want to see everything, please. Mm-hmm. Everything that is relevant to this. And so, like, I spent a fabulous 2 days in the bowels of the I can't even remember the name of it. Oh, dear. The museum in Friesland. No, it's just not coming to me. With the curator there, and it was so fabulous seeing so many different examples. And, you know, so I'm allowed to handle them if I'm wearing gloves, and I'm allowed to photograph them, and I negotiate the rights to those photographs so that I can use them in my books. But, yeah, there's just so much to be looked at. So I'll photograph things very carefully. If there's areas of interest, then I'll photograph those particularly, as well as the whole thing, so that I can go home and look through all of those photographs and let it just all sink in, so that I can really come to understand what makes that style a style. So all of the learning is not done while I'm there in the museum. A lot of the learning is done there, but a lot happens afterwards when I carefully and slowly go through all those photographs and let it come together in my head so that I can understand it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I will find that there's a detail that I didn't get enough information on. So I have in the past gone back to the curator and said, do you have any photographs of this that you could send me, please? And where they're able to, they send me those things.
Yeah. Because that was the next thing that I was going to ask you about, is when you're in those situations, you're trying, at some point you can't absorb all of it in the allotted time.
Yeah. you would have information overload.
Right. So you just collect as much as you can so that when you get back home, you can sit down and with a clear mind study it and take it in. But it's really just get as much as you can recorded in the time.
Yes. Yeah. And then the process of taking it all in can take months.
Yeah.
To just carefully go through it and think, what are my questions? And sometimes I'll be able to ask those questions of the curator. Sometimes the curator, that may not be their area of expertise, they're able to help me access the collection, but they don't necessarily know the answers. So then I've got to work it out either for myself or find someone else to ask.
Mm.
That kind of goes along with my question. Are they surprised that you're interested in the textile collection, or is there...
No, what they're surprised about is that I would come all the way from Australia to look at their embroidery.
Okay.
And I say, but it's beautiful. Why wouldn't I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think, that's a good question, Beth, cause that in a museum, you know, the stuff that's out on display, you know, and that's the focus, you know, our next exhibit. And we got all this cloth and thread in the back here. Nobody's ever interested in that. And then, yeah, I want to see it. Yeah, I want to study
I don't know that that's the case at all. In Australia, in the museums that we have here, whenever there are fashion exhibitions, they are highly well attended. Like, people love them. So, I mean, that's fashion, which is not necessarily the same as textiles, but it does have a textile element to it. And I think there is actually a lot more interest in textiles than people would generally think there would be. I might be the only person that goes and has a look at that stuff within a certain period, but there would be others that would be interested in it too. So
yeah.
I don't think I'm just the only person that gets to see these things.
Yeah. Oh, it's got to be so much fun to go in the back room and just be able to spend a day studying that kind of history.
Then. Oh, it's fabulous.
Documenting it and,
So I'll be taking photographs and making notes while I'm there.
Yeah. Now, when you come back with that kind of information, photos and everything, and you're studying it, what are the steps you're taking? Are you studying it and then diagramming out? Say you're going to do filling stitches. Are you diagramming it out? Do you get needle and thread out and say, let me see what if I can execute this? How do you go about that?
I will always try it before I try diagramming it, because I've got to know. And I won't try it once. I will try it many times. And so particularly when I was doing Edelweiss stitch, which is a nasty, nasty stitch that people like, but, oh, my goodness, I would avoid it if I possibly could.
I've
never been taught how to do that.
I did.
So I was working from a range of instructions and then trying to understand where people would go wrong, which was easy because I was going wrong there too. Yeah. So it was a process of me trying again and again and again to improve the result that I was getting until I was happy enough that I would think, well, if I do that, that'll turn out like this. So therefore I need to tell people how that is. Mm-hmm. You know, if it helps me create the stitch, then it's going to help you create the stitch too. So yeah, there is no way that I could possibly write a set of stitch instructions without having tried the stitch first and figured out where people might go wrong and then tried to help them through those difficulties.
Yeah. Yeah. This
is not a big beginner stitch. You can see that. And then, you know, this is one that would definitely take a practice a few times because it's intriguing. I want to try it. I've got to at least try it once. I might not try it again.
When you do try it more than once because you probably will improve. So my first attempts were just horrible. Like they really look awful at the time. I thought, oh, that doesn't look too bad. And then as I went on and, you know, when I was up to say the 20th iteration, I looked back at those first ones. Oh my goodness, that's disgusting.
So again, a little doodle cloth and a little bit of practice. I think that's.
It might need to be definitely a big doodle cloth for something like that stitch.
But I think it's important to, you know, to, I think sometimes people are afraid to stretch themselves and to try something new. And this one to me, it's like, okay, I've got to try it. I mean, it's so overly complicated. I mean, it looks beautiful. That's what intrigues me. It looks like a little flower, little star, and texture.
Well, I think in writing any of my three stitch dictionaries, one of the reasons why I've written them is because so many of us stick with our favorite stitches, whether that's just general embroidery or whether that's hardanger. And there are so many more stitches out there that are worth giving a go. And you might find, oh, this is my new favorite stitch, which if you'd never tried it, you would never know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True. True. And the only way you can know is if you play with it a little bit. You might not like, I know there's, I think it's the Palestrina knot. I've tried that
stitch.
And at first I didn't like it because I think I was using too thin of a thread and going too far apart. But once I scooched my knots closer and used a thicker thread, I was like, oh, This is
Yeah.
better. This is better. But
Yeah.
I didn't know when I first did it. I think I was using two strands of floss and too far apart, and it was like, this doesn't look like much.
Yeah.
But it was fun to play with. It was, I mean, but I didn't until I played with it a little bit. You wouldn't know. I mean, and I was the same with these filling stitches. You need to try them. I mean, how are you going to know if you're going to want to use them on a project?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about that project. Let's go get some thread and some needles. That's going to sleep tonight.
Oh man.
So this is not so relevant for Hardanger, but for general embroidery, one of the things that I think we need to do is try these stitches with different types of threads because they will behave differently. Now, it's not quite so relevant to Hardanger because we generally just use one type of thread or, well, cotton or linen. But with other embroidery stitches, try it in a pearl cotton, try it with a stranded thread, try it with crewel wool, try it with something thick, something thin, and they will react
Shiny.
differently. Yes,
Yeah.
shiny, furry, fluffy, and some you'll get a really good result with, and some you won't, but you will learn this stitch looks really good in this thread. And you just don't know that unless you try it.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have to. And just to play, just to take the needle and thread and do it yourself. You can look at
Yeah.
images of it, but you need to try it yourself, I think, sometimes. Just, play
Exactly.
with it yourself. Play with it
I get
yourself.
a lot of people who ask me questions like, should I use this thread with this? And I will say, I don't know, give it a go. If I want to answer that question, the way I answer it is to try it. You don't need me to try it for you. You can try it yourself.
Yeah, it's just needle and thread. Yep.
Just needle and thread, just needle and thread. You said something in your book that struck me too. You made the statement, along with the more understated and demure pulled thread stitches, it is the cut work that cut creates drama. But I think it's important that you need those pulled stitches in there, because when I look at the cover of the book, and you have this beautiful drama going on, but then if you didn't have the cable work in between, it misses something. It
Yes,
misses
it
something. You got
does.
to have
So when
both.
I'm
It's the
designing,
texture.
when I'm designing, I'm thinking about open and closed, heavy and light, full and empty, and all those sorts of contrasts, and you need the full range in there. So if we just had areas of really dense stitching and really open stitching, well, you need something in between. And that is where your drawn thread stitches, your pulled thread stitches come into play. So your eyelets and your cable stitch and your four-sided stitch and those sorts of things. So they all go together to contribute the whole. And without those things, it just doesn't have the right balance, I think.
Right. And you can see it when you show the photographs of the costumes of the ladies that are wearing like the traditional
Yes.
costumes. Yes, drama there with the open work that's there, but there's also you can see the texture of what they have and the rest of like their aprons. I mean, is what I'm thinking of in particular from
Yes.
that you show in the photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so important. I think you got to have both.
You do.
And it's like, and to me, it's like if you're using color and you only have really dark and really light colors, you've got to have that medium in between,
You do.
or it doesn't work. It doesn't work properly.
All right. Hardanger filling stitches. If you don't already have it, go get it.
Please.
Because,
Absolutely. Thank you.
you need to have that.
Let me
And the
tell
Hurt
something.
Early style.
Please. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I think anybody who wants to give it a try should have the early style Hardanger by their side as they go through it, because it is it's really well done. So, yep. So on top of this, then we have design work and teaching. You're teaching classes you teach in your home, you travel in Australia. How do you go about that?
Well, obviously, in the last year, I haven't done any teaching at
Yeah.
all because I spent the whole year being sick. But generally, I would travel a bit to teach. I have been teaching in the past in my hometown here, which is just a tiny little rural town in New South Wales. But where possible, I like to submit to some of the big overseas seminars. I've done quite a lot of teaching in New Zealand in the last few years, and I love doing that because they are such warm and friendly people. You will never find me not wanting to go to New Zealand. But I know that people in America desperately want me to come back and teach again, because I did the Embroiderers Guild National Seminar in 2019, which is a while ago now. So I will just keep submitting until something gets accepted. Just because I submit doesn't mean it will be accepted, but I try to put my best foot forward and present a range of things that might fit with other people's submissions as well. Because the thing is, I'm very expensive to bring over. Much more expensive than a person who lives in the US. So to get me into the country, I mean, you've got to pass the visa requirements and all of that. It does make it more of a hurdle for me to jump over, but I will just keep trying until it happens again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's more than just having somebody hop in a car and
drive. Yeah, I can't just enter your country and start teaching. That would actually be illegal if I was on a tourist visa. So, and I want to, the opportunity to be able to come back again. I don't want to get kicked out. So I like to do these things properly. Yeah.
And just so people understand, because I forget when we talked about this, is that there's to come to the States to teach something, you have to, what do you have to get? Is it, they don't want you teaching because someone, you might be taking somebody's job, or what? How does that all work?
I don't actually know. I'm just a victim of it, you could say. But I figure that for me to get a visa to come into the country, I have to be not taking the work that someone who is already within that country could do. So therefore, the things that I offer have to be something that are uniquely something that I can offer. And then hopefully that will pass the test and I'll get the visa.
And people who are making this decision have never stitched a thing in their lives. So, yeah.
I imagine that's quite true. Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident it's true. Yeah. Yeah. I just struggle with that whole concept. I mean,
I think that's quite reasonable. I don't want to be taking work from someone else who should rightfully have that. But if there's something that I can offer that no one else is offering, then yes, please let me in. Please let me do it.
There's 9 books worth of it. 9 books worth of it. Yeah, we don't. You're not going to hurt anybody. Jeez. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then, do we do online classes? I know that's an issue for you, is online classes, just because of the interaction that you need.
Yeah. So a lot of people think, oh, we can't really afford to get a vet over here, so we'll just ask her to teach an online class, which in theory sounds fabulous. You know, it is a cheap way of getting a teacher from a long way away into your lounge room or wherever it is that you're taking the class. But for me, teaching Hardanger and very, very exacting things like that, it's quite difficult to teach online. I can show you what I'm doing very well, but when I'm in the actual classroom, I'm wandering around the whole time and checking people's work as I go and offering feedback. Now, sometimes I will just wander up to someone and I will see that they've made a mistake. They won't necessarily pick that up themselves until maybe further down the track. Mm-hmm. But if I can get them at the point where it's not the point of no return, then that's really helpful to them. If I'm on a screen in a different country, I'm not doing that wandering around the classroom. Mm-hmm. And it would mean that someone would have to know already that they've made a mistake to come and show it to me and say, what have I done here? Then there's the difficulty of seeing through their screen enough detail to be able to understand what they have done wrong. Mm. I mean, it is possible, but it is not the ideal way of teaching something that's so exacting. If it wasn't so exacting, then it wouldn't be so much of a problem. But if someone's one thread out, that may make the difference between something that falls apart and something that works beautifully. Mm-hmm. And I want my students to be successful, and I feel that the best way that my students can be successful is for me to be in the room with them.
Yeah.
As frustrating as that is.
Yeah. Yeah, because in today's technology ridden age, everybody thinks everything can be done online, and a lot of it can, but there are limits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly I can instruct you online, but my interaction with you is a lot harder for me to see your work.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to help you position your needle and thread and your hands in the correct way or whatever it is, if I'm not there with you.
Yeah. Yeah. So online doesn't work. Darn it.
Well, it does, but to a point. So yeah. Like I do have an online class, which is for the Frisian Whitework Silk Sampler. And, you know, there are people working their way through that at the moment. This morning I had someone send me a photograph of their progress, and my goodness, it looked beautiful. But I also know of someone who else has been working on it through the course, and she found that she had made quite a mistake and she had to start over.
Oh,
now, we'd been together, we may have been able to stop that from happening at an earlier stage.
Yeah. Yeah, and that just sucks the fun right out of it if you have to start all over.
It does.
Yeah.
And I think of my friend who's working, she's working on the Frisian sampler with the bullion knots. And mm-hmm. I know she's such an excellent stitcher. She must be doing something wrong with her bullion knots tension-wise, because she said they're all different shapes. And she said, I'm going to have to, she's never done bullion knots, which was surprising to me.
Mm.
Because she's such a good stitcher, I thought she'd tried them at least once before. She says, I'm going to have to take them all out again and redo them. And I thought, I've got to get to her and say, did you watch Yvette's video on YouTube? Because you have a great explanation there. I know it helped me improve my bullion knots. But
yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to see if I can get a hold of her. But yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, because she is such a good stitcher. If you were sitting there watching her, you'd say, oh, well, let's try that this way, you know. And she wouldn't be ripping a whole row out and bullion knots, you know.
Because the way I teach my bullions is a bit different to the way some people do. And I go through and I do a few and I show people how to do it. And then I let one go absolutely haywire because that happens to us. And then I show them how to get it back to being the beautiful thing that you want it to be.
Oh.
It usually can. Unless it is so knotted that you have to cut it out, usually a bullion can be resurrected.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'll keep that in mind next time I do one.
Just keep trying, keep trying. Usually what it is there's too much thread, and so you need to keep pulling the end of the thread, the working end of the thread, till you have gotten all of that extra out. And then you need to stroke it and stuff to get it back into shape and so that it's got beautiful, beautiful wraps around that central core. If it looks wonky, you've probably got too much thread in one part of it.
Mm.
So just keep pulling until you've got all of that extra out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sounds easy, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And a good needle and the right needle, too. That was the other thing. I think I suggest use a different needle than what she was using, a Milner, a straw, or something with the eye that's even with the shaft.
Yes.
So it'll make a difference. She goes, it will.
Yes. Rather than trying so hard to pull it through, it will just glide through.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm. All right, Yvette. Fun as always. Thank you. And
thank you very much.
People need to get them here in the States. Just about any of the stores can get them because Search Press makes them available here in the States. Early Style Hardanger, and then the newest one, the Filling Stitches book. They need to be in your library if you're doing hardanger at all. Both of them.
This one too.
And then Frisian White Work. Because Beth wants somebody to stitch that thing with her, I think.
Now, some of my books are not distributed by Search Press in the US. Some of them, the older ones particularly, I have a different distributor. And I'm currently using Sassy Jack Stitchery as my distributor. So if you are from a shop and you need some of my older books, go to them and they will have them for you.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I'd forgotten that. Kim has, because I remember she said she got the boxes one day.
Yes, the books. Boxes.
Yeah, so the older books, Kim has them all.
She does.
Yeah, so that's quick. That's a quick phone call, and you can have that book in hand. So, and then the two that are out of print is the left-handed stitching and the Ukrainian one.
That's right. And they are on my list of things to revise. Just these things take time for me to do, so don't expect them next week.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Oh. I've got a life to live, and these things take time.
All right, Yvette, thanks so much for doing this. Folks, get the books. You can use them. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.